now. Boba Fett had drawn his head back from the metal cup filled with water that Dengar had held out to him.
There's someone else in this place, isn't there?
The mere effort of his words sent his chest laboring.
A female.
Dengar said nothing. He had other things to do besides talk with the sinister figure lying on the pallet, a little farther away from Death Shores than Fett had been even a couple of days ago. But the other man's cold gaze held him as tight as the curved hook of a gaff stick.
There's no need to lie to me about it, said Boba Fett.
His words were as cold and unemotional as the gaze from his eyes.
I saw her.
Dengar was about to answer to tell the bounty hunter who the female was when the bombs hit. He had a memory flash of a light sharp as knives against his eyes and brighter than Tatooine's suns combined into one. Then he was spitting out gravel and blood as he felt his arm being tugged by someone unseen.
Come on!
The voice was Neela's. Her hands gripped tight around his forearm and pulled. Rocks and sand poured off his chest as his scrabbling efforts, feeble at first and then made stronger by sudden desperation, combined with hers to extract him from the remains of the subchamber.
He's still in there.
She meant Boba Fett, of course. Neela was already digging at the rubble that blocked the doorway.
What are you waiting for?
She looked back around at him, her eyes blazing through the dust and sweat covering her face.
Help me!
Are you crazy?
Dengar reached down and grabbed an arm, pulling Neela to her feet.
There isn't time for that. Whoever's laying down those bombs will be back. We've got to get out of here.
I'm not going without him.
Neela yanked her arm from Dengar's grasp.
Save yourself if you want to.
She turned away and started tugging at one of the larger rocks, nearly as high as herself. There were tunnels underneath the hiding place, curving and smooth-sided, that ran deep into the planet's bedrock. Dengar had investigated them far enough to know that they connected with the great pit of Karkoon. With the Sarlacc beast dead, they would make a safe refuge from the bombing, but only if they were reached in time, before the next destructive wave collapsed what remained of these spaces. Dengar hesitated only a moment before cursing himself as a fool and laying both his hands on the rock just above Neela's hands. The large rock suddenly shifted, spilling Neela forward onto the rubble-strewn floor. Lying on the pallet, Boba Fett had lapsed back into unconsciousness. Dengar and Neela each took one end of the pallet and lifted, hoisting Fett high enough to carry out into the hiding place's main chamber.
Wait a second.
After they were clear, Neela set down her end of the pallet and climbed back into what remained of the subchamber space, emerging a second later with Boba Fett's scoured and dented helmet and combat gear. She piled it on top of the unconscious bounty hunter.
Okay, let's go.
They both collapsed in exhaustion when they reached the safety of the lower Sarlacc dug tunnels. From here, the bombing raid sounded as though it were happening on some other, unluckier world. Neela glanced at Dengar, then at the unconscious form of the bounty hunter.
Who ordered this raid?
Who knows? Dengar set a lantern, one he had managed to scavenge hastily from the hiding place's equipment, on a shoulder-high outcropping.
This guy's got major enemies. It's probably one of them.
Then that would mean somebody knows that he's alive. Somebody besides us.
Somebody must have been spying on us, said Dengar.
Maybe somebody from Jabba's palace, he thought. There had been plenty of scoundrels there, even after Jabba's death, with the necessary skills for staying unseen while watching the comings and goings out in the wastelands.
Somebody saw me taking Fett down into my hiding place.
Don't be stupid.
Neela shook her head. If somebody knew exactly where Fett had been taken, they wouldn't bother blowing up everything within sight of the great pit of Karkoon. One missile straight down the tunnel entrance would have done the job, simple and clean.
She had a point, Dengar admitted to himself. Boba Fett wasn't the only one who lived by secrets.
The kind of clients he'd had and enemies he'd made were the same way. A surgical strike would have eliminated Fett without the risk of drawing attention that a bombing raid entailed. Silence filled the tunnel as Dengar looked upward, listening and waiting.
I think we're all clear now.
We can go back up?
Are you kidding?
Dengar shook his head, then reached for the lantern. The light picked up the jumbled shapes of the rubble filling the passageway.
We're blocked off. Even if there's anything left of my hiding place, which is a big if, we couldn't get to it now. I'll have to push on and see if there's some other way of getting to the surface. There's an air current coming in from somewhere. You can feel it on your face. If we follow it to its source, we might find some place where we can dig our way to the surface. When the tunnel's floor leveled beneath their feet, the slope he and Neela had carried Boba Fett down had extended through its various twists and turns at least 100 yards. Look! Neela called out from behind him. Dengar glanced to where she pointed and spotted the cleft in the rocks overhead. The hole looked hardly bigger than the width of his hand.
This'll take a little work.
Dengar mulled over the situation.
I can get up there, all right, and so can you. It doesn't look like that bad a climb.
He pointed to Fett.
He's gonna be the problem, though.
You've got a line coil, haven't you?
With a nod of her head, Neela indicated one of the equipment pouches at Dengar's waist.
If you could get up there and pry the gap open wider, or if you could get out to the surface, then I could tie a loop around his chest and under his arms, and you could haul him up.
Dengar took out the line and fastened one end to his belt, so his hands would be free for climbing. He gave the rest of the coil and the lamp to Neela, instructing her to point it toward the crevice he'd be working on, and started to climb, fingertips digging into the loose rock. One stone shifted as he put his hand's weight on it. He would have crashed down the slope he'd traversed so far if he hadn't managed to loop one arm around a larger outcropping just above and to the side of his head. He reached up and grasped the edge of the tiny gap he had spotted from the floor of the tunnel. With a push, it gave way, and more daylight spilled down from the dune sea's surface. The beam of light suddenly disappeared.
Hey!
Dengar shouted to Neela below him.
Swing that light back up here. I still need it.
There's something down here.
Neela's shout echoed off the curved walls of crumbling stone. Her next words were tinged with sudden fear.
Something big.
Dengar managed to twist himself around. A raw laugh burst from his throat as he recognized the mottled surface, rounded and stretching higher than even the tallest humanoid stature.
It's the Sarlacc, said Dengar. Or part of it, at least. That's why it smells so bad in here. There's probably pieces of it scattered all through these tunnels.
He turned back to his work on their escape route.
Get that light beam up here.
It's alive!
The force of Neela's shout came close to knocking Dengar loose from the outcropping.
What are you talking about? You can smell that the thing's deader than...
His words turned to silence as a visible shiver ran across the towering convex wall of the Sarlacc segment. A sense of foreboding moved up from the base of his stomach and into his throat. Boba Fett had killed the damn thing. He'd blown his way out of its gut. But maybe it's got more than one stomach, thought Dengar. Or it can regenerate itself like a plant. His fears proved suddenly correct. The curving wall of the Sarlacc segment reared up like a giant serpent uncoiling. It reached higher than Dengar's hold on the outcropping, the scales dragging across the roof of the cavern several meters away from him. The interior of the cavern shook with seismic force as the Sarlacc's writhing form crashed down. Rubble poured down the widening gap. Even before he could see what was happening down below, Dengar had gotten his end of the rope around the outcropping and had knotted it fast.
Grab the line,
he shouted as the dust started to settle.
I'll pull you up.
He could feel her tugging at the other end of the line, but when he could see below himself again, he saw that Neela had dragged the unconscious figure of Boba Fett from the pallet and had gotten him upright. Fett's weight was braced against her shoulder as she looped the line around his chest.
There.
Neela stepped back and shouted to Dengar,
take him up! Start pulling!
Dengar knew that arguing would be a waste of time. He clambered up onto the outcropping's top surface, then reached down and grabbed the line with both hands. His spine hit the rock wall behind him as he reared back and pulled, hauling Boba Fett higher into the open space. The Sarlacc segment coming within inches of the bounty hunter's feet as it doubled upon itself in agony. Fett was still several meters away from Dengar's grasp as the Sarlacc segment crashed down. Neela gave a cry of mingled pain and fear as it rolled onto her foot and lower leg, pinning her to the floor. All that it would take to crush her into a lifeless and broken thing would be for the Sarlacc to continue its twisting, rolling motion, the heavy tide of its bulk sweeping through the cavern and obliterating everything in its path. With one hand holding onto the rope, Dengar dug with the other into the holster on his belt and managed to drag out his blaster. He shifted his position on the outcropping, trying to line up a clear shot past the dangling figure of Boba Fett and into the mass of the Sarlacc. That shifting of weight on the stone, plus the damage to the already precarious walls of the cavern, caused by the Sarlacc's convulsive thrashing, was enough to break the outcropping free. The forward edge shot downward as Dengar scrambled to keep hold of it. The knot of the line fastened to Boba Fett slid down the outcropping and caught at the juncture of the stone and the crevice wall. The sharp, sudden movement had knocked the blaster free from Dengar's grip. He watched helplessly as grip and muzzle tumbled end over end. He saw something else then. Something that had come to life as unexpectedly as the buried Sarlacc. Boba Fett's eyes opened, gazing directly into Dengar's. Time seemed to stop as Fett's cold regard pierced the other bounty hunter's spirit. Then, time started up again, slamming into microsecond events. One of Boba Fett's hands, raised from his side, shot out and caught the falling blaster. As sharply and deftly as an uncoiling serpent striking its prey, the weapon filled his grasp as though it were an extension of his being. Fett's gaze broke away. As Dengar watched from above, Boba Fett scanned downward to where the great bulk of the Sarlacc segment held Neela trapped against the cavern's floor. Fett sent the blaster's impact pouring into one spot on the curved surface of the Sarlacc. As a burning stench mingled with the thick odor of decay that already hung on the close, lung-oppressing air, Neela crawled painfully forward, dragging the leg that had been trapped behind her. As the bright stream from the blaster in Boba Fett's grip continued tearing open a wider and deeper section of the Sarlacc, like a red doorway being carved into living stone. A scream of agony, the wordless cry of a wounded beast, sounded from far within the unlit tunnels beyond the cavern space. The segment retracted into the tunnel opening at the farthest edge of the cavern, leaving stones and churning dust behind. In Boba Fett's hand, the blaster went silent. Dengar could see in the bounty hunter's face that he was burning up the last of his strength, summoned from a reserve deep within him.
Lower me.
Dengar managed to brace his feet against the side of the gap enough that he could unfasten the line from the outcropping and pay it out hand over hand, gradually dropping Boba Fett toward the floor of the cavern. When the line slackened, Dengar looped it over his shoulder, using his other hand to climb up the vertical opening. He reached the surface, collapsing onto the hot sands of the dune sea. Drawing in an exhausted breath, he sat up and clutched the line tight in his fists. A tug came on the line. Dengar stood up and pulled, grabbing more of the line as he backed step by step away from the opening. He could tell from the weight that there was more than just Boba Fett at the other end of the line now.
More muscle than brain, thought Dengar, as he brought the line inch by inch over the rocks and sand.
He supposed that was why he had a certain place in the bounty hunter business and Boba Fett had a different and much more famous one. He dug in, the line's tautness keeping him from falling over backward, and finally saw one of Fett's arms reach upward from the hole. Boba Fett had his other arm around Neela. The line went slack, dumping Dengar onto his seat as Boba Fett got Neela up onto the sand, then, with a final push against the sides of the hole, collapsed beside her. Kuat of Kuat stood at the great viewport of the Kuat Drive Yard's flagship, watching the mottled sphere of the planet Tatooine dwindle in the distance. His military squadron was heading back to Kuat by a circuitous route to foil any possible attempts at tracking and linking them to the just-concluded bombing raid. All insignia and identification beacons had been carefully stripped from the vessels before they had left on their mission. When word of the raid filtered through the watering holes and back alleys of Mos Eisley and any corresponding places on other worlds, the speculation would most likely be directed toward the Empire, or possibly the Black Sun organization. That notion pleased Kuat of Kuat. Even more pleasing was the notion that Boba Fett had reached his final destination. That had been the whole point of the bombing raid. Many other sentient creatures, humanoid or not, would have heard of someone going down the gullet of the Sarlacc and would have concluded that was the end of that person. Kuat of Kuat had, however, more experience with the individual in question. Boba Fett had always had an unnerving ability to show up alive, if somewhat battered, long after any ordinary man's death would have been well assured.
"It's not enough to know that someone is dead," he whispered. "You want them buried. Or, better yet, scattered across the landscape in little pieces."
There was so much at stake, so many plans and schemes, so deeply laid and so critical to the survival of Kuat Drive Yards, that it was worth any expenditure of time and capital to try to remove Fett from the multi-leveled game board on which the Empire's pawns advanced. However, the main reason Kuat had canceled any orders for a second bombing run on Tatooine's Dune Sea was the conviction that it was a pointless endeavor. If Boba Fett was going to be eliminated, it wasn't by any means as relatively crude as that. "He'll take a good deal of killing before he's dead enough." He supposed the raid hadn't been a complete waste, though. "Perhaps I've slowed him down. There would be time to shift a few other pieces into position, to contemplate the game board and devise strategies for him." Then...
"You came straight here?"
Kredosk didn't turn around to look at Zuckuss, but continued idly fiddling with the couple of pieces from his bone chamber.
"As soon as you landed, you didn't talk to anyone else?"
The tubes of his face mask's breathing apparatus swung back and forth as Zuckuss shook his head.
"No one. Those were your orders when, you know, when you gave me the job."
Zuckuss looked up into the old Trandoshan's eyes, into the black slits of that hard reptilian gaze.
"Everything happened the way you wanted it to."
"You saw it?"
Kredosk demanded an eyewitness verification of his son's death.
"You saw him take the shot?"
"Right in the chest,"
Zuckuss answered. He didn't get up after that.
"I'm glad to see that you can follow orders."
Kredosk held a rib bone up close to his aging eyes. The name of the vanquished foe to which it had once belonged was incised along its length, the mark scratched there by one of his own foreclaws.
"I'm impressed with your loyalty and your intelligence. Both of those attributes will stand you in good stead in the difficult times before us. Mark my words."
Kredosk's gnarled claws gripped the bone as though it were a club suitable for thrashing miscreants. His voice rumbled lower, matching the heavy scowl on his scaly face.
"If the other bounty hunters of your generation were as smart as you, and respectful of their elders' wisdom, then a great deal of trouble could be avoided. But they have ideas of their own."
He spoke the word with loathing.
"Just as my son did. That's why it was so important that he be eliminated, and in a way that would not appear to have been from my conniving. This way, to have it happen on a world far from here, and while trying to collect merchandise from such clever, greedy creatures as the Shellhuts, it makes his death seem the inevitable consequence of his own stupidity and incompetence. The old ways are the best ways, especially when it comes to killing other creatures."
Kredosk resumed his contemplation of his long-dead enemy's rib, letting it evoke deep, musing thoughts.
"It's good to remember these things, to be wise, more than wise, cunning. Because,"
he nodded slowly,
"there's going to be a lot more killing before everything's straightened out around here."
Zuckuss heard a slight noise from the doorway. Glancing over his shoulder, he saw Kredosk's majordomo, the Twi'lek that was always sneaking around place on shadowy errands. The Twi'lek held one of his elongated forefingers to his lips, signaling Zuckuss to remain silent himself, and scurried away down the guild's dark corridors. Kradosk shot a hard-eyed gaze at Zux.
Don't try telling me. You're not smart enough to know what's going on around here.
Well,
Bosk was only the first one. The first that had to be eliminated. There will be others. I've got a list.
I bet you do, thought Zuckus.
Not all of them young and foolish, either. Some of my oldest and most trusted advisors.
Kradosk ruefully shook his head.
I should have anticipated it. But then again, how could I? I loved these killers.
Anticipated what?
Zuckus knew that as well, but figured the question would keep Kradosk going a while longer. By his calculations, the Twi'lek Majordomo would need a little while longer to finish up his conspiratorial rounds.
Traitors! Backstabbers!
Kradosk's voice was a low, muttering growl.
Maybe I shouldn't take any chances. Maybe I should just have everyone killed. Wipe clean the whole roster of the Bounty Hunters Guild. Start fresh.
Great, thought Zuckus.
But first, said Kradosk, we get rid of the obvious targets. The ones who have already announced their intentions to either take over the guild or split from it and set up a new bounty hunters organization of their own. As if I'd ever let that happen.
Zuckus had already heard about these developments. The breakaway faction was eager to get as many guild members onto its side as possible.
There's big changes coming, said Kradosk. Everybody who said that has been right, and will continue to be so. The Bounty Hunters Guild will be different from what it was before. This galaxy belongs to Emperor Palpatine now, and we'll just have to deal with that. If this breakaway faction had just bided their time and remained loyal to the Guild, they very likely would have gotten everything they want.
Except,
Zuckus pointed out,
for getting rid of you.
Kradosk shot him a glance of venomous fury, enough to push him back a step with its intangible force.
That's right, he growled. That's the one thing that's not going to happen. Count on it. The Bounty Hunters Guild is going to be a lot smaller than it was before. A lot of dead wood is going to be cleared away. I admit I should have seen it sooner myself, that some of the elders in the organization had lost their edge. Well, they'll be gone before very much longer, whether they made the mistake of going with the breakaway faction or whether they're still sucking up to me.
Well, I better be going.
Zuckus gestured toward the door of the private quarters.
There's still a lot I have to take care of.
He was pretty sure that the Twi'lek Majordomo would have had enough time by now to contact everyone that needed to be.
You know, since coming back from the job...
Carrying the trophy from his younger days, Kradosk moved toward the bone chamber, the repository of all his precious memories. The door to the private quarters creaked as Zuckus pulled it farther open, but he didn't step out to the corridor beyond. He stayed where he was, so he could watch what he knew was about to happen. Which took place within seconds. Kradosk found his way blocked by his offspring, Bosk. The younger Trandoshan stood with his arms folded across his chest. A wide smile split his face as he gazed down into his father's startled eyes.
But, Kradosk gaped at his son, you're supposed to be dead. I know that was the plan, said Bosk with feigned mildness. But I've made some changes to it.
Kradosk whirled about, looking back toward the private quarters door and Zuckus.
You lied!
Not entirely.
Zuckus gave a small shrug.
Just the bit about him not getting up again after he was shot.
With a single foreclaw, Bosk pointed to the sterile bandage running diagonally across his chest.
It really hurt,
he said, still smiling.
But it didn't kill me. You should know how hard our species is to get rid of. And also, whatever doesn't destroy one of us just makes us that much more pissed off.
A look of panic appeared in Kradosk's yellowed eyes. He took a step backward from the figure looming in front of him.
Now, wait a minute. I think you might be making some rash assumptions here.
One of Bosk's hands shot out, grabbing his father by the throat.
No, I'm not.
The smile was gone from his face.
I'm making the same assumptions I made a long time ago. There isn't room in the Bounty Hunters Guild for both you and me. I don't know what you're talking about.
Krados grabbed the other's wrist in a futile attempt to ease his hold and get breath into his own lungs.
The guild is for all of us. I'm talking about the same thing you were talking about just now.
With his other hand, Bosk pointed a clawed thumb back toward the unlit depths of the bone chamber behind him.
I was in there the whole time the two of you have been blabbing away all that stuff about clearing out the undesirables from the Bounty Hunters Guild. And you know what?
Bosk tightened his hold, his fist at Kratos's throat, lifting the older Trandoshan up onto the claws of his toes.
I agree.
From the doorway, Zuckus could hear shouts and blaster fire coming from somewhere else in the guild compound. It had been pretty much what he'd been expecting since the Twi'lek Majordomo had gone off to notify the others in the breakaway faction. He turned back toward Kradosk's private quarters and watched the rest of what happened in there for as long as he could. Then he stepped out into the corridor, shaking his head. Bosk was certainly right about one thing, he had to admit. It did take a lot to kill a Trandoshan. The sound of the breakaway faction's weapons was heard even farther away. Not literally. The news was reported secondhand to Kudar Mubat. The assembler purred.
Isn't it pleasant when things go just the way they're supposed to?
Kudar Mubat reached out one thin black leg and stroked the ridges of Balance Sheet's small head.
Creatures are dying, even as we speak.
The assembler spoke matter-of-factly, without sympathy or remorse.
And even the ones who think they're on my side, who believe they are still free, they'll find out the truth soon enough. No one escapes forever.
Balance Sheet folded a couple of its own legs across its small abdomen.
Not even Boba Fett?
Not even Boba Fett,
answered Kudar Mubat slowly. It kept a set of eyes on the accountant node and watched for any expression in the narrow-angled face, so much like a miniature version of its own.
How could he escape, that is? For him to do so, he would have to be wiser than I am.
Kudar Mubat peered closer at Balance Sheet.
Do you really believe that such a thing is possible?
Of course not, said the sub-assembler.
No one is even as wise as you are, not even Emperor Palpatine.
True,
said Kudar Mubat. Though the assembler had to admit that Palpatine operated on a grander scale.
But that's just megalomania,
brooded Kudar Mubat. And worse, in Kudar Mubat's estimation, it was folly to become absorbed in the big picture, the sweep of history on a cosmic scale, and overlook the little details was to risk the complete and utter ruination of one's plans. There were things going on underneath Emperor Palpatine's nose that he knew nothing of. Not just the hidden errands of the rebellion and its sympathizers, but connections between beings that were yet so faint that even it, the wise Kudar Mubat, couldn't trace them out. Bits and pieces of rumors, stories of long-vanquished Jedi Knights, and its own worthless guesses were all that Kudar Mubat had to go on. Something to do with the planet Tatooine, and a few humans who lived thereon, innocent and unaware of exactly how important they were. Or did they know? Perhaps one of them had a notion of these secrets. Perhaps that old man, living out in the endless wastes of the Dune Sea, that Kudar Mubat had heard of. Gloom permeated his meditations as the assembler reminded himself of just how much still lay beyond the strands of his web.
Just as well,
it philosophically decided,
that all those things are Palpatine's concerns and not mine.
True wisdom rested in knowing one's limitation.
Exactly so,
chimed in Balance Sheet. It had picked up its parents' thought over the spun silk neural network that both connected and housed them.
That shows how wise you are. Would Emperor Palpatine ever have thought of such a thing?
For a moment, Kudar Mubat was annoyed that the little sub-assembler node had listened in to these private musings. It thought that it had inhibited the appropriate neurons to prevent just such two-way data flow. Then its mood softened.
"Now, you're the one who's wise," said Kudar Mubat affectionately.
It reached over another black spiky leg and let the accountant node scramble onto its end.
"I'll very much regret that day when I'll have to..."
Kudar Mubat cut off its words just in time.
"Have to what?"
At the end of Kudar Mubat's leg, the accountant node peered back at its progenitor.
"Nothing. Don't worry about it."
Kudar Mubat was sure that the little node hadn't picked up on that particular thought, the one that had to do with its inevitable and imminent death.
"Let me do the deep thinking."
"Of course," said Balanchine. "I would not have it otherwise."
From the docking port at the edge of the compound, Boba Fett could hear the shouting and the sound of blaster fire. None of it was aimed his way, so he went on working, recalibrating and tuning Slave One's weapon systems. With his attention thus focused, there was little chance of his being distracted by the violent internal politics of the Bounty Hunters Guild. "Besides," thought Boba Fett, "I've already done my part." Or at least most of it, he corrected himself. He knew there was still more to be taken care of before the job of destroying the Bounty Hunters Guild was finished. One great rift between the old leadership and the upstarts wasn't enough. By his calculations, there would be an even split between the two groups once the binding agent of Kradosk had been removed. Some of the elders, who had always chafed under the old Trandoshan's leadership, would throw in their lot with the young, impatient bounty hunters. Some of the latter, reluctant to accept Bosk's leading the breakaway faction, would side with whatever was left of the guild's elder council. But on both sides, Boba Fett would have his ringers and stoolies, feeding him useful information and helping to drive even more wedges of suspicion and greed between one bounty hunter and the next. There were two factions now. Soon there would be dozens. And then, thought Fett with a cold lack of emotion, it'll be every bounty hunter for himself. That was something he was looking forward to. Now. Neela pointed to the brutally efficient-looking object, all matte-black metal and embedded in electronics, in Boba Fett's grasp. "What does it do?"
"Rocket launcher."
Boba Fett didn't look up from his painstaking labors. With a tool as delicate as a humanoid hair, he scraped a dried mucus-like substance, the remnant of the weapon's time in the Sarlacc's gut, out of its intricate circuits.
"And what it does, if you know how to work it, is kill a lot of creatures. At once. At a nice long distance away."
"Thanks." She felt one corner of her mouth twisting in an expression that would have been ugly if there had been an audience for it. "But I could figure that much out. Don't think you have to patronize me. I was just trying to pass a little time with something like conversation, but I guess that's not within your range of skills." He made no answer. The motions of the wire-stiff tool and its sharpened point were reflected in the visor of his helmet as he continued working. The oppressive suns glazed the landscape with dry, shimmering heat, still visible in reversed colors when Neela closed her eyes. Even in the shade of a sloping entrance to Boba Fett's underground cache, the hard radiation of the desert light cracked her dehydrated lips. Neela raised a container of water and drained it in one long swallow. Another canister stood slowly evaporating next to Boba Fett. He hadn't touched it. Resuming his armor had transformed him from a raw-skinned invalid to the imposing specialist in death that he had been before falling down the Sarlacc's throat. Sealing the restored helmet's edge to the uniform's collar had completed the apotheosis. He didn't drink the water, Neela realized, because he had become a self-contained unit sealed against the frailties of mortal creatures. Or at least that was the impression he tried to give. She leaned back against the mouth of the cave, the rock's residual heat spread across her shoulder blades. The day was dead time, A matter of waiting until Dengar returned from Mos Eisley. Boba Fett at least had something to keep himself busy. After they had escaped from the bomb-shattered remnants of Dengar's subterranean hiding place and the regenerated Sarlacc that had wound its tendrils through the broken stone, only a single night had been spent in the chill open, their bodies huddled against each other to keep from freezing. When the morning had finally come, Boba Fett seemed the strongest of the three humans, as though in the dark he had absorbed some precious segment of the other's dwindling energies. He had led the way, stumbling at first, but then with greater sureness as the landmarks had grown more recognizable. Like the other mercenaries and hard types that had worked for the late Jabba, or at least the ones smart enough not to trust the wily hut, Boba Fett had maintained a stash of crucial supplies in the wilderness. He had been cleaning and repairing weapons since their arrival at this hideout, and had already salvaged most of the personal armaments with which Neela had seen him equipped back at Jabba's palace. She wrapped her arms around her knees and continued to watch as the human elements of Boba Fett were progressively submerged and hidden beneath the layers of armor and weaponry. She hoped it wouldn't be too much longer before Dengar returned. For many reasons. If the parties responsible for the bombing raid decided to come back and do a more thorough job on their targets, she was sure Boba Fett would survive, but her own chances would be considerably fewer. Fett had plans for getting her and Dengar, as well as himself, off Tatooine and out to interstellar space, where they would be safe for at least a little while, and long enough to set further plans into motion. The only obstacle lay in getting the comm equipment that Fett needed. He couldn't go into Mos Eisley to buy or steal it, not without raising a general alert that he was still alive. That was why Dengar had gone into the spaceport instead. But if he screws up, thought Neela, then what? She and Fett would still be stuck out here waiting, not for Dengar, but for whatever the next attempt to eliminate them would be. The squat, indifferently maintained shapes of Mos Eisley came slowly into view as Dengar kept walking, quickening his strides. He hoped to make it to the cantina without being noticed. The spaceport abounded with snitches and informers, creatures who made a living selling out others, either to the Empire security forces or to whichever criminals and assorted marginal dealers might have a financial interest in someone else's comings and goings. That was what had always made Mos Eisley, an otherwise dilapidated port on a backwater planet, one of the galaxy's prime hangouts for those practicing the bounty hunter trade. If you stuck around long enough, you eventually heard something that could be turned to profit. The downside, as Dengar was well aware, was that it was hard to keep one's business a secret around here. A couple of whispers in the right ear holes, and you wound up becoming someone else's merchandise. Right now, he wasn't aware of anyone looking for him. He wasn't that important. Though that might change all too rapidly when word got out of his being hooked up with Boba Fett. An alliance with the galaxy's top bounty hunter brought a lot of less than desirable baggage with it. Other creatures' schemes and grudges, all of which they might figure could be advanced by either going through or eliminating anyone as close to Fett as Dengar had become. Those and other disquieting speculations scurried around inside Dengar's skull as he made his way through Mos Eisley's less pleasant and less frequented byways, and found the rear entrance to the cantina. With a quick glance over his shoulder, he slid into the familiar darkness and threaded his way among the establishment's patrons. A few eyes and other sensory organs turned in his direction, then swung back to discreetly murmured business conversations. He rested both elbows on the bar. I'm looking for Codex Santhanan. He been in lately? The ugly bartender, familiar from all of Dengar's previous visits, shook his head.
That barf got drilled a couple of months ago, right outside the door.
Excuse the lamentable discourtesy.
A hand with bifurcated talons tugged at Dengar's sleeve.
But I couldn't help overhearing.
Glancing to his side, Dengar found himself looking into the black bead eyes, no more than a couple of centimeters in diameter, of a Kanithian Aeropteryx. One of the beads swelled larger as the creature's other set of claws held a magnifying lens on a jeweled handle in front of it. Dengar had been expecting something like this. One's business couldn't stay secret for very long in the cantina if spoken in anything louder than a whisper. "Let's go over to one of the booths," said Dengar. Those were far enough away from the cantina's crowded main area for a measure of privacy. The Kanithian flopped after him on the flattened tips of its shabby gray wings, useless for any kind of flight. It struggled into the seat on the booth's opposite side, then settled down as though wrapped in a feathered cloak.
"I heard you mention poor Synthenon's name."
The taloned hand protruded from under the wings so that the Kanithian could scratch itself with the magnifying lens handle.
"He met a sad demise, I'm afraid."
"Yeah, I'm sure it was tragic." Dengar set his arms on the table and leaned forward. "What I want to know is, did anybody pick up on his business?" He glanced across the cantina, then turned back to the Kanithian. "The message service he used to run, that's what I'm interested in."
"Ah."
The Kanithian made a few thoughtful clacking noises with its rudimentary beak.
"What great good fortune for you. It just so happens that that is an enterprise over which I now exercise control."
"Great good fortune." That was one way of putting it. Dengar wondered for a moment just how the late Santhanana had met his end and how much this Kanithian had to do with it. But that was none of his business.
"Whatever communication you require,"
continued the Kanithian, words and voice all mild blandness,
"I think I can assist you with it."
Dengar looked hard into the magnifying lens and the mercenary intelligence behind it. "Here's the deal. I need to send a hyperspace messenger pod."
"Really?"
The feathers above one beady eye rose in apparent surprise.
"That's an expensive proposition. I'm not saying it can't be done, just that, since I haven't done business with you before, it would have to be done on a strictly credits upfront basis."
Dengar reached inside his jacket and pulled out a small pouch. He loosened its drawstring and poured the contents out on the table. "Will that do?" The bifurcate talons reached out for the little hoard of hard credits.
"We may be in business here."
"Not so fast." Dengar grabbed the other creature's thin, light-boned wrist. "You get half now. Half when I hear that the message reached its destination."
"Very well."
The Kanithian watched as Dengar divided the credits into two piles.
"That's a regrettably standard arrangement, but I can live with it. So, what's the message you want to send?"
Dengar hesitated. He'd known how far he could trust Codex Anthanan. He'd dealt with him before, but this Kanithian was an unknown quantity. Still, right now there was no alternative. He leaned farther across the table. "Just four words."
"Which are?"
"Boba Fett is alive." Both of the Kanithian's feathered brows rose.
"You appear to be a serious person, and you're paying serious credits, but everyone knows that he was eaten by the Sarlacc."
The eye behind the magnifying lens blinked.
"Are you telling me that the renowned Boba Fett is alive?"
"That's none of your business," said Dengar. "I'm just paying you to get the message to where it needs to go."
"As you wish,"
replied the Kanithian.
"And just where is that?"
"The planet Kuat. I want Kuat of Kuat to receive it."
"Well, well."
The Kanithian's feathers rustled as he shifted position on the seat opposite Dengar.
"Now that is interesting. What makes you think a creature as important as the CEO of Kuat Drive Yards would be interested in hearing something like that, whether it's true or not?"
"I told you already." Dengar spoke between gritted teeth. He was about ready to reach over and crush the magnifying lens in his fist. "That's not your business."
But I think it is."
The beak opened in a crude simulation of a humanoid smile.
"We are something like partners now, you and I. If Boba Fett is alive, there are others who would be interested in knowing that rather intriguing fact."